present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig. Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a press release from the Liberal Democrats website, read by Charlotte Green.
The Liberal Democrat Shadow Transport Secretary, Alistair Carmichael MP, has commented on the findings of a survey showing that drivers supported tougher sentences on drink drivers. Mr. Carmichael said, "This is not a time for half measures."
And our thanks to Andy Tyler White for spotting that. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Andy Hamilton and Clive Anderson. And opposite them on my left, Alan Corrin and Jeremy Hardy. Andy, we're going to kick off with a musical clue.
Ooh, that's quite cryptic, isn't it? This is the big bird flu scare. It's getting quite serious now. Various countries have reacted differently. In Holland, they're taking the whole of their countryside indoors. Whereas in Britain, we've decided to adopt the approach of putting all the infected birds into lorries and driving them up and down the roads in order to limit the infection. But this story doesn't really stand up because they're saying that it's wild birds that have caused the outbreak, but no wild bird has been found to have died from bird flu. So it's rather far-fetched to think that maybe the one solitary duck that had it decided to fly over countless fields containing birds and then made its way to Suffolk and then somehow got into Bernard Matthews's factory.
Personally, I have a bit of sympathy for them. I mean, you poor old turkeys.
Well, you know, my theory...
They're just celebrating getting over Christmas.
Yeah. Well, that's my theory. In fact, what you're looking at is Bernard Matthews's nightmare, which is that one of the turkeys worked out what was going to happen to him. And I think we're not talking about avian flu. I think we're talking about a suicide pact.
There was a thing they were going on about the H5N1 virus. It says it's transmitted silently. And it suggests that there's some sort of normal flu that comes with brass accompaniment. It was a kind of...
Turkeys can't even reproduce. They have to have assisted reproduction because they're so fat at the front that they can't get together anymore.
John Prescott has managed it. The story was that 160,000 turkeys have been put down after an outbreak of the avian flu strain H5N1 at a Bernard Matthews farm in Suffolk. And scientists detected an outbreak of the bird flu strain after noticing some of the turkeys were behaving strangely. In one hut, they found a glider, and... Clive, why does the House of Straw have insufficient support?
Jack Straw is the straw, and what he's doing is proposing a change to the House of Lords. It's not something we want to rush into. They've been talking about reforming the House of Lords for about 100 years. So he's come up with yet another plan. There'll be a few people who'll be elected, maybe, a few who'll be appointed, and there's others who'll just get there in the ordinary way by paying good money to the Labour Party.
And all these villains getting interviewed by the old Bill, nobody so far has interviewed the Queen, who actually hands all these things out without a murmur. Yeah, and you begin to think, I wonder how she came by
can't
hers.
Prosecute the Queen.
What do you have to pay in order to get crowned?
It would be odd, wouldn't it? Be RVR in the Queen against the Queen.
Dustin Hoffman and Meryl Streep could do the movie. I mean. Whatever happened to trial by combat? Isn't that the way that you used to become a lord in the old days?
It was abolished by the Pope, I think, wasn't it, 1189?
Because the problem is getting rid of the number of peers that are there now, the hereditary peers and the... You know, I would pay good money to see Baroness Thatcher swinging a mace at Lord Archer. That would be... And then you're down by 50% before you even start.
Yes, indeed. It is Jack Straw's latest plans for reforming the House of Lords, or as Lord Callaghan once called it, Heaven's Waiting Room. Mr. Straw wants to create a part-elected, part-appointed chamber to be known as the house that Jack built. And
Why can't we just organise some elections for this second house? It's not that difficult to work out, is it? They should do it by proportional representation, really. In the voting, you know, say 30% voted Labour, you'd have 30% Lords, 30% Conservative, few Liberal Democrats. But then the rest of them have to be made up of the 50% who didn't vote at all. So you'd have a load of people who aren't interested in politics who'd be lords.
We'd have three chambers then, the ayes, the nays, and the whatever. Jeremy, whose disappearing dollars are biting the hand that delivered them?
America took all this money off of Iraq from their oil wealth and then converted it into dollars. I don't know what process goes on when they convert money. I don't know if it's a religious thing, but they shrink-wrapped it to keep it fresh and American and shipped it back to Iraq and gave it out without getting any receipts. And it's $12 billion, which is £4. And they just said, well, it was their money. One of the Americans said, well, it was Iraqi money, so we don't care what's happened to it.
Makes peerages look quite good, really.
Do you think we need to interview the soldier who was distributing this money? Because it sounds perfect, doesn't it? Yeah, I gave it all out. I didn't keep a record of the individual Iraqis I actually gave the $12 billion to.
Yeah, he lives in Hawaii now.
Yeah, I know. So.
An American House Committee investigation has revealed that $12 billion of Iraqi money was spent by the American-led coalition in 2003 without any proper controls, raising the possibility that it may now be being used to fund the insurgency. When questioned about the missing money, the coalition's financial advisor, Admiral David Oliver, said he didn't think it was important whether or not the money went to the right people, and he is currently being headhunted by the NHS. Alan, who's breaking and entering into the charts at number one?
I didn't read a lot of papers this week because Jeremy Hardy was doing Countdown every afternoon. He only had him on to make Des O'Connor look talented. And Carol Vorderman look classy. But I think I saw this one. Britain is the most burgled country in Europe.
Yes.
Everything is stolen. And the Europeans are very upset about this because they've fallen behind. Even as we speak, there are Germans out there trying to learn how to steal things. Probably Poland.
But we are the worst in Europe for most things, but nobody else can make a cup of tea, can they? Give ourselves some credit, and nobody else puts a brave face on things like we do, or takes cuttings from things, because that's what we do. Things we can't take cuttings from, we put a brave face on.
I've actually got an additional question about, I have to say, one of the all-time strangest crimes. Which moonstruck lover took a wrong turn this week?
Oh, that's the woman, that's the lovely astronaut in the enormous nappy. And she was desperate to kill another astronaut who was shagging a third astronaut. He often wondered what went on up there. He knew they didn't just sort of hover around.
Most interesting is the nappy thing. I didn't know that astronauts wore huge nappies up there. They're there for weeks sometimes, aren't they?
She didn't want to stop, did she? She put a giant nappy on so that she could drive all the way across America without stopping. But petrol's the word that springs to mind.
For this astronaut, she probably didn't think, she thought, oh, it's only 1,000 miles, what's that, about 3 seconds, normally you do that. And, yeah. And it was only then she realized, oh no, this doesn't take much longer on the road.
So, when you buy somebody, like, as a present, you buy them a pamper session. Is that,
Space Shuttle astronaut Lisa Nowak has been charged with attempted murder after driving over 900 miles in a nappy. To try and kidnap her love rival in a NASA love triangle. She should have known that the astronaut in question would leave her. Space shuttle pilots always break up on re-entry. And the other story related to an EU crime and safety survey, according to which Britain has the highest rate of burglary in the European Union and London is the EU's most dangerous capital. The Home Office questioned the EU survey, saying it was inaccurate and out of date. Which would be a specialist Home Office area, obviously. So, at the end of round one, the scores are Andy and Clive have got 4, but Alan and Jeremy are in the lead with 5. We start round 2 with a notice from Glamorgan University.
Please note that the Health and Fitness Roadshow, due to be held on the 1st of February, has had to be cancelled due to staff sickness.
And our thanks to David Lewis for spotting that. Andy, why have pupils got a lot or a little to learn?
At least 3 days have gone by without a reform of the education system. So having decided that the thing we needed was a standardised curriculum, they now just think, oh, that's madness. What we need is a lovely, informal 60s kind of free-for-all where the teachers kind of improvise the lessons as they go along, and sometimes they can do a whole day on one subject and sometimes they can just do 10 minutes. And they want to throw away the conventional syllabus. They want to teach modern languages, languages which are useful, like Mandarin, you know, useful phrases in Mandarin, but like, put me down, I am not a member of Falun Gong. basically, that's it. But they said not to worry, that rather strange statement, that Anne Boleyn would still be beheaded. And made me worry that the government minister maybe had confused history with contemporary news.
I did some research. I wrote my piece this week on the Mandarin thing. I thought Alan Johnson was saying that by 2012, people were able to go down to the Olympic Village and talk to the Chinese team in Mandarin. And so I rang the Department of Statistics of the Department of Education and said, how many French teachers are there? And they said, 23,000. I said, how many have you got to teach Mandarin? They said, 78. Now, they've got to find 22,922 teachers of Mandarin before they can even start teaching children.
They might be going to reverse the downshift in class sizes and have classes of 10,000 people. A bit like China, really. Have everybody in boiler suits and one teacher in a huge stadium. 40,000 pupils.
Well, I was very uneasy seeing the terracotta army is coming here. The Chinese are sending us the terracotta army. And we haven't heard of the wooden horse because we don't teach history. These buggers are going to have Chinese in them. All our lads are in Iraq. And we're going to hear this tapping noise in the middle of the night outside the V&A. Chinese paratroopers will be all over South London.
How big do you think these terracotta soldiers are, Alan?
They don't have to be very big. Are they very big? Have you seen them?
They're not big enough to have whole troops.
We're not getting
there's
the
only one man. Only need one bloke, innit?
You know what?
One bloke with a temper.
My fear is that when this goes out, there's a listener at work in the Chinese embassy thinking, it might just work.
The original question was about the government's Qualifications and Curriculum Authority, which has announced a radical overhaul of the secondary school timetable so that subjects can be taught in tandem and entire weeks are turned over to single topics. And apparently, the curriculum will encourage activities to help pupils become more confident, such as taking an unaccompanied journey with one change of transport. Or, as that's known at my kids' school, stealing a car and then stealing a bus. Clive, whose lack of frills but plenty of spills has landed them in trouble?
Oh, well, actually, there have been lots of airline stories this week. This is not British Airways charging you extra for having a bag on the plane, is it?
No, but that's a supplementary question. You get an extra
point. Oh, thank you very much. This is... The actual question about some nitpicky thing, because it's the no-frills airline, I think it's Ryanair.
Yes.
Well, they were criticising for, I don't know, landing the planes not very well or something. I mean, they provide a basic service, which is you turn up at the airport, they turn you away if you're 1 second late, and then the planes go there, and if they land, well, that's a bonus. That's everyone's... So that's a sort of no-frill they've kind of got around. Some nitpicky report has been saying, well, surely it could be a bit better than that.
I was upgraded. I went to Belfast, and they upgraded me. I was quite excited. I thought I'd get a new hard drive. But they'd oversold the flight, and I was forced to go in business class, and I'd never been before. I was a bit scared, really, in business class. I thought, well, I have to play golf. Join the round table.
How did you get this upgrade? Would you go and say, hello, I'm Jeremy Hardy from BBC Sports News Quiz.
Yeah, that works.
Countdown.
Oh, yeah, that works. You don't even need a passport if you've been on quote-unquote. But, it's because you don't have a life. No, they upgraded me because they'd oversold the flight, and so they had to find a seat for me, and there was only one in business class. But what shocked me was they gave me my sandwich, which was at room temperature, which was very nice. That's the only perk, is a sandwich, and it comes in a shoebox. And you think, this is going to be the mother of all sandwiches, this. But most of the space in the shoebox is taken up with a real glass, made of glass, that could be used by anybody who'd ever been to Newcastle. Could be fractured and made into a sharp object. And you think, after all this security malarkey, I've had to hand in my tweezers lest I try and tug the captain's nose hairs and force him to crash into Canary Wharf. And then they give me a bloody glass.
The Ryanair memo has revealed the airline is threatening to sack pilots who make mistakes after it was criticised by air accident investigators over a series of dangerous approaches to airports. Actually, there was some very good language used by this because the pilots' union were very cross about the whole thing. And the guy that was talking about it, he said investigations into poor landing will only force the problem underground. And the other story is that British Airways has sparked controversy by adding £240 to the cost of a long-haul flight if a passenger puts two bags in the airline hold. Jeremy, who's got something to declare about their extended warranty?
Passports have a chip now, and the passport lasts for 10 years, but the warranty on the chip, the manufacturer's warranty, only lasts for 2 years. So after that, you have to take out, as you say, an extended warranty, which covers parts and labour, but not accidental damage. So if you put your passport through the washing machine, as we all do, you're not covered. And so it's all this new technology is not up to scratch, and we're all going to end up with broken passports. I think people working at airports should just have to remember us. Open our borders, do away with all this nonsense, and they should just have to know you. In the old days, when we used to have proper BBC security, say, hello, Mr. Hardy, welcome to the studio. Whereas now you get a marigold finger gig before you're allowed in the building.
Well, this is a very surprising story. The government has messed up a flagship scheme involving overpriced technology. Thank God it wasn't anything important. The National Audit Office has been going through its receipts and discovered that the microchips used in the new biometric e-passports only come with a 2-year warranty. Would have been better to buy them at Dixon's. And potentially this could mean that passports, which should have lasted for 10 years, may only last for 2. Alan, why might backseat drivers soon be the law?
This is not that health and safety bloke who passed a police car at 70 miles an hour in a 50-mile-an-hour zone while he was shaving and got done, which I rather liked.
You can have a point for that, but that isn't what I was looking for.
Oh, what a pity. I was thinking, when with the shaving soap, because I'm that same age as this bloke, shaving soap in one hand, a cutthroat razor in the other, steering with his teeth.
What I liked was he was on his way to a first aid course.
Yeah. Well, your question was about backseat drivers.
Yes, so being told how to drive.
Ah, well, it's the thing about exhaust fart, isn't it? It's cars are going to cost £3,000 more so that their gram disposability is kept down to 130. But it's only new cars, so it really doesn't matter at all, because people won't buy cars that are £3,000 more, and it'll just be the old cars going around while the Chinese build a factory every 10 minutes. Come and see our new terracotta factory.
Apparently, there's going to be new legislation to fit all new cars with devices to tell drivers when to change gear.
What speed? It's got a wife, isn't it?
Oh, you'll be so popular. And at the end of round 2, Alan and Jeremy have got 10 points, but Andy and Clive have leapt into the lead with 11. And before we start round 3, here is an excerpt from an interview with the actress Harriet Walter.
I can't do anything else while I listen to music. I need to focus on it totally. For that reason, I tend to listen to it only when I'm in my car.
Thanks to Elizabeth Roberts who sent that in. Andy, why is a stroke of the cat a good way to whip stress?
This is the story about how if you keep a pet, you're going to be a much more sane and balanced person. Now, the evidence of my life suggests otherwise. But basically, if you can stroke a cat or a dog, you'll be calmer, or if you're feeling a bit stressed, you come home, you can kick them, and that will dissipate your stress and your anguish. I'm not sure what the objective evidence is, what the control is.
Some people are stroking a placebo.
Yeah. Placebo would be something that they think is a pet but isn't.
Yeah.
So it'd really be a dead terracotta cat.
Yeah. Or a turkey with a sniffle. You know,
yeah.
Something like
that.
Apparently there was more to it as well. Not just stroking a cat, but sniffing a colleague's armpit is relaxing.
A colleague's armpit?
A colleague's.
Is it to do with you get a whiff of some pheromones and that calms you down?
Yeah.
It's not working for me with Clive at all.
I now realise what you were doing earlier on, but I was stroking you thinking you were a pet.
Not the first to have thought that. The stroking a cat thing to calm you down, clearly, I mean, it didn't work for Blofeld, did it? He wanted to destroy the world all the time. He didn't say, ah, Mr. Bond, it was good to see you. I think I'll let you off this time. You're free to go.
And you get 2 points. Clive, why did a row over the House of the Lord reach the House of Lords?
A couple of unlucky people bought a house. Coming with this house was some requirement to repair the church roof, which in an average year probably just means putting on the odd slate or clearing out the gutters. But unluckily, the church said, oh, really, a new owner of that house? I think we need a whole new roof. So these poor people, they didn't know what to do. They put up a thermometer outside their house saying, you know, roof appeal. And they put some money in and they got to, you know, 100 quid each. And then they said, well, they dispute it. And they've argued the toss in every court in the land and they've got to the House of Lords. And I think they've lost them. They've got to, because I think they knew. I think it was in the document and they bought their house. It was this clause 953, and you've got to maintain the church roof. So tough luck on them. So I think they're converting to Islam and going to blow and get to blow it up because it's cheaper.
Is the church roof not covered in the survey?
I think maybe the estate agent wasn't honest with them. He said, no, that's a greenhouse with a spire.
It's an old medieval ecclesiastical law under which Andrew and Gail Woolbank have been presented with a bill for £200,000 for the restoration of St John the Baptist Church in Warwickshire. The Woolbanks own a field which is classified as rectoral property. That's so unpleasant. Dear. I know. Jeremy, why is there no room at the Innski?
This is a bit weird. In the Tyrol, there's someone leaving.
Hi.
Tiny foot falls like an angel.
He's just going home to check his lease. It's next to a synagogue, we must be safe, surely, but no.
In that Tyrol is a hotel, or more than one hotel, where people go for some reason, and Russians go there in large numbers. And the owners of the Tyrol, or the hotels they're in, think there are too many Russians, and they've set a quota of only 10%, because they said they don't want to be dominated. Remember the Anschluss, you voted for that.
Well, this is the Austrians saying that the Russians are vulgar, and this is a nation that wears lederhosen and flaps its legs.
They're not slapping legs, they're trying to stroke their legs, they haven't got any pets.
The luxury Austrian ski resort of Kitzbühel has voted to limit the number of Russian guests it hosts to 10% of the total to keep its international mix. The Russians are notorious for drunkenness and unruly behaviour. In fact, at first they thought they were British until they realised that they could actually ski. 2 points for Jeremy. Alan, have a listen to this. Out of interest, Alan, do you know who that is?
It's Kylie Minogue.
Oh, well done, you.
It's about Kylie Minogue taking over the Victoria and Albert in her underwear.
I watched this on News 24 and I was fascinated. There's all these men standing there queuing to see his exhibition, and the interviewer tasked to go and get a vox pop managed to find the one heterosexual man who just said, I've always been a big fan of Kylie. And I thought, Gun Magazines, lives with his mum, wears a balaclava in bed.
The Victoria and Albert Museum has experienced record demand for tickets for an exhibition devoted entirely to the iconic stage costumes of pop chanteuse Kylie Minogue. The V&A holds artefacts covering 3,000 years of world culture and Australia. The 200 items of Kylie memorabilia have been sent over from the Arts Centre in Melbourne, which now presumably stands empty.
You've taken losing the ashes quite hard, haven't you?
actually, they had to use a bottom double for the drama about John Prescott.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Mm, apparently, the actor's bottom wasn't quite right.
He'd been injured in a car crash, yeah, the actor said.
That...
What on earth are you doing?
He was when you shaving, went along.
Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings that the teams have brought along, Andy.
This is from Mark Mansbridge of Lewis. It's from a magazine, and it says, "This half-day course gives the essential facts and dispels some of the myths about cannabis and marijuana, Britain's most popular illicit drug, suitable for anyone working in health, housing, social work, criminal justice, education or voluntary service."
Clive.
Jeremy Godwin said this in, "A Slovak man trapped in his car under an avalanche freed himself by drinking 60 bottles of beer and urinating on the snow to melt it. Rescue teams found Richard Crawl drunk and staggering along a mountain path 4 days after his Audi car was buried. He told them after the avalanche he had opened his car window and tried to dig his way out. But as he dug with his hands, he realized the snow would fill his car before he managed to break through. He had 60 half-litre bottles of beer in his car as he was going on holiday. After cracking one open to think about the problem, he realized he could urinate on the snow to melt it. And he did." It's a tip. That's a clipping and an AA tip. Always carry bottles of beer with you and always have this as an excuse when you're found by the police staggering around drunk with your car stuck in a ditch.
Jeremy.
This was sent in by Craig Brody of Banbury in Oxfordshire, and he's from the Irish Sunday Independent. "A big bust-up. Busty Olga Moltov injured 13 people when her 42 double D brass trap snapped. The Moscow housewife said the force made her fall down escalator and land on top of unlucky shoppers."
My lovely boy at the end, Alan.
I spotted this in the Sunday Telegraph magazine a couple of weeks ago. It says, "Nobody addressed poignancy better than Frank Sinatra, and nowhere did he better address it than in those two beautiful ballads of nocturnal loneliness, The Wee Small Hours of the Morning and Stranglers in the Night."
Right, let's take a look at the final score. Alan and Jeremy have got 14, but this week's winners are Andy and Clive with 15 points. And before we leave you, here's a personal ad spotted by Lewis Nichols.
Lesbian couple seek sperm donor with flexible involvement.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Andy Hamilton, Clive Anderson, Jeremy Hardy and Alan Corrin. In the chair was Sandy Coxwick, and the news is read by Lee Charlotte Green. The chair script was written by Simon Littlefield, Rodney Crooks and Lucy Clark, with additional material by Danny A. Ward. The producer was Ed Morris.